This is Seeing Red, the New York Soccer Roundup. Now in our second decade of bringing you the best independent New York Red Bulls news and opinion with your hosts, Mark Fishkin and Joe Goldstein.
The Red Bulls take and then give away a pair of points in Charlotte on a night when the refereeing was poor, frankly. It's Seeing Red, the New York Soccer Roundup. Tonight on the show, we'll go inside the road draw at Charlotte last week. We'll get ready. Anytime the Red Bulls in Atlanta we meet, it's a lot of storylines, a lot to talk about. We'll preview the match. We'll go around the East. Match predictions. We'll chat with Jason Longshore of Atlanta United Radio and an email. I'm Mark Fishkin. I'm here with Joe Goldstein. How are you, Joe?
I'm doing good. I think this week is good so far. No thanks to the refs in Red Bull land, but doing good. How about you, Mark?
I'm a little under the weather, so I apologize, listeners, if I'm a little gravelly. But, you know, so be it. It's one of those early spring, late winter jobbies that just doesn't want to let go. But nevertheless, Elias Manuel had an attempt in the first half that made me literally say woof as he pushed the ball with his foot to Charlotte's keeper and then was the beneficiary and created, frankly, a wonderful goal off a terrible mistake. These poor back passes have been endemic in MLS this season. It's usually at St. Louis City SC that benefits from this, but not only did the ball fall right from Nathan Byrne to Manuel, he was able to fight off the challenge and calmly slot the ball for his first goal of the season, which was a wonderful thing.
He can only score against Charlotte, apparently. I'll give him a pass on that first one because I think it was deflected too. I don't think it was just a straight shot, but not a terrific performance from him overall, but glad that he's on the board, even if it was a bit of a gift of a goal. I had very high hopes for the rest of the game following that goal.
And they
were dashed.
Yeah, no, they were dashed. New York did its typical very, very positive first half. They were rewarded, if you want to say, with Manuel's goal, which may not have been that particular play been representative of what had happened up until that point in the match. But nevertheless, as it usually happens, you know, New York took 6 of the 7 shots in the first half. But unlike the last few games, it was really in the second half, things kind of fell apart. From a defensive standpoint, they were having trouble holding their shape. Charlotte got a lot of the ball and, you know, the reffing decisions we'll talk about in a second, but in the 72nd minute, the ball comes across the face of goal, and I mean, you know, this happens to defenders when they're facing their own net, and the ball goes in off of Andres Reyes' foot, and it's not ideal for sure, but it was. Charlotte had been pressing, and they had been in and around the box, maybe not a number of goal-scoring opportunities, really, per se, but they had looked dangerous, and when you continue to look dangerous, that's when good things happen for you.
Yeah, I think maybe a little bit of that was by design, that they wanted to give up some possession so that Charlotte would have more space in behind them as the game wore on. Obviously not a ton of opportunities that came out of that. And I also think, we'll get into those refereeing decisions, yeah, like you said, but I think the way that the game was called, allowed Charlotte's game plan, which was to really just try to out physical the Red Bulls. And they did a good job of it and were allowed to do that based on the referee. And so by the second half, I think, you know, you got tired legs for the Red Bulls, but you also have battered legs where, you know, these guys were kind of falling apart,
yes,
as they're getting battered around the field. So not great. I think a little bit of egg goes on the team's face. I think a little bit of egg goes on Struber's face for the way that he approached the second half, or he had the team approach the second half.
Yep.
And yeah, I mean, of course, I think you never want, the refs are never the reason that you don't win a game.
Well,
but
sure.
Where there's two misread guards.
Yeah, I mean, we have to talk about Brant Bronico going studs up on Omir Fernandez. This was not even a yellow card. I mean, this was just a garden variety foul. And in a world where, I mean, intentional or not, you go in studs up on a guy's shin, that's a red card. It just is. Yeah. And the fact that VAR, I mean, the VAR looked at it. VAR can absolutely create, overrule a ref on the field of red cards. And in fact, the league suspended Bronico for a match that came down this afternoon. So the league understood very clearly that this was a red card offense. New York doesn't get the benefit of playing a man up. And then in the 64th minute, an elbow from Derek Jones to Cam Harper knocks Harper out of the match. Here's a kid who's already had a concussion this season. And yes, Jones was awarded a yellow, but that should have been a red. And
yep.
If you really want to go there, you can certainly argue that Kyle Duncan should have received a second yellow card for a late hit after the 80th minute. And he should have been sent off only minutes after coming on. And so who's the ref? Marcos de Oliveira. I mean, that was one of the most poorly adjudicated matches I've seen in a long time. 7 yellow cards in the match, and he missed 2 of the most important ones that, frankly, would have changed the game. I mean, there's no way you could say they can't. So, yeah, Joe, sorry.
I mean, Bronico and Jones are so important to that team.
Yeah.
And it's not just the missed red card. I think allowing the game to get as physical as it did, it really got out of hand for both sides. I'm watching this game. My children don't really watch soccer at all, but they saw the foul at Omir and said, without prompting, no audio, oh, that's a red card, right? He's going to get a red card? It was a really obvious moment and a terrific failure. For all of the, you know, prestige that we're talking about with the MLS getting this immense broadcast deal from Apple, and you know, all eyes are on the league.
Yeah,
that was real bad, and you know, the 2 goals in this game were sloppy, terrible goals. But getting back to the point, I think the ref has an obligation to keep the players safe, and intention or not,
yes,
it really should not come into how he decides what a card is. The fact that there was no card on the play at all is just completely mind-boggling for Omir.
Thankfully, he wasn't seriously injured.
So when those things are happening, you get towards the end of the game, Kyle Duncan gets a little bit physical, John Tolkien loses his head a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, these aren't great situations, probably lucky that nobody else got suspended or carded or retroactively suspended. And yeah, I mean, despite having the lead and losing it in a kind of horrific way, it's still a point on the road.
It's still a point on the road, but consider, right, the Red Bulls allowed again only 1 shot on goal from Charlotte. They set the record in MLS for the fewest shots on target allowed by any team ever through 5 matches, and that's 7 shots on target. Opponents have scored on the Red Bulls 4 times off of 7 shots on target. And yes, a road draw is not a bad result without any context, but this team has won only 1 of their first 5 games despite only giving up 7 shots on target, and 1 was a penalty. Yes.
1 was a penalty. 1 was a horrific defensive mistake. Here's another defensive mistake. So, you know, despite, you know, we've talked about it in the last couple of weeks, how good the defense is playing, they're still making these like 1 really bad decision that's costing them points right now. So they definitely have to clean it up a bit. And, you know, on the flip side of that, how many shots are the Red Bulls even taking on target? Well, have they set a record for fewest number of chances?
No, they haven't. And again, they've won or tied XG battle every single week.
Very true.
Talk to me about what you thought about Van Zier's time on Saturday, because it was not sexy football.
It was not. I think again that coming off the bench for a guy like Van Zier might seem like a slam dunk, but it doesn't seem like it's working very well. It's hard for him to find the game. I'm not really sure what the expectations are for where he's slotting into the lineup when he comes in.
He touched the ball four times in 20 minutes.
That's not great. It's not great. And, a lot of that falls down to the way the Red Bulls approach the half.
Yeah,
but still, he's got to come back and find the game. If the game's not finding him, his pedigree is such that he should be able to pull the strings a little bit if needed. And so he should be dropping back a little bit more and trying to combine just to get touches and to get, that rhythm going with his teammates.
We have an interesting email about Van Zier, which we'll dig into a little bit more. I will say that in the midweek presser, Struber had noted that he had been ill over the course of the week.
Okay.
But one win in five matches. Again, one win in five matches, and these aren't points you get to go back and try and win again. But I agree with you, Joe. It was the way that New York played in the second half. The tactics had some longtime fans calling for the end of the high press and calling for the end of Struber ball because, so many things can happen during a match that tilt the scales in one way or another. If Charlotte loses two of their players, it's completely different. If the game was refereed correctly, then things would have been different,
For sure.
Let's move on from this exhibition of football.
Debacle.
Yeah, it was just, it was a little WWE in there. I mean, it was really... It was out of control from the ref. You have a bowl of the week? It's tough, right? No. You want to give it to Manuel for his goal?
But the rest of the game just really was... I mean, there's a lot of moments in that match where he almost looked a little bit lost up top, which was not great.
No.
It was a bad game all around. I guess...
Tom Barlow had a shot on goal in the 88th minute without much
pace. What a beautiful play because, the pace was bad. But held up the ball, found Tolkien on the run. I don't know who to give it to this week. Traveling fans. There you go.
That's the default when the answer is meh. Traveling That's fans, right. If you were in Charlotte, congrats to you. Well done. The U.S. men's national team moved forward to the final four of the CONCACAF Nations League. After dropping a house on Grenada and doing just enough against El Salvador, they will play Mexico in the semifinals in June in Las Vegas. So that's good. I mean, they didn't look stellar against El Salvador, but they got the job done. McKennie to Ricardo Pepe with a nice goal, and there you go. Let's talk about the Red Bulls. Let's talk about Atlanta United. Saturday at 7:30, the Red Bulls visit Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Atlanta suffered their first loss of the season last time out, but they are 3-1-1 for 10 points. They're third in the East, 4 points and 8 places above the Red Bulls. Last season, an off season for Atlanta, which made me smile. 10-14-10 for 40 points. They finished 11th in the East. And just when you thought Atlanta might never be good again, they've found a way to put it together. They've scored 12. But they've conceded 9 in 5 matches, and 6 of those goals came last week in a shock loss at Columbus. At home, they're 2-0-1 for 7 points. They're the top home team in the East, and they've made some additions, signing Spanish striker Miguel Berry from DC. Greek striker Georgios Giacomakis came in from Celtic as a DP, and they're expecting big things out of him. Peruvian center back Luis Abram came in from Granada in Spain. Senegalese goalkeeper Clement Diop and Quinton Westberg came from New England and Toronto. And our friend and former guest and MLS Cup winner, Derek Etienne Jr., has arrived from Columbus. Out was Raul Gudino, Edwin Mosquera. Of course, Josef Martinez is now at Inter Miami after a much-publicized feud. Marcelino Moreno is out on loan. Emerson Heineman is a free agent, not with the team. And George Campbell was traded to Montreal. And we have to talk, obviously, about Thiago Almada, MLS's lone 2022 World Cup champion. The Argentine has all he's done in four matches in MLS this year, has scored four goals and has four assists. There's no one in the history of the league that has done what he has done. I think he's been MLS Player of the Week twice in the 4 weeks that he played, and he scored for Argentina while he was away on international break. Without Almada last weekend, and without, I think they were missing six or seven players, Atlanta. Yeah. They were crushed 6-1 by Columbus, which made me go, huh? Until I realized that they literally didn't play. It was a completely rotated squad.
Yeah.
Here are Atlanta's five games this year. On opening day, they beat San Jose at home with Araujo and Almada, who missed a PK in the 93rd minute, got the winner in the 99th minute on a free kick that I know that you have seen. There are a couple of free kick goals that have been absolute highlight winners. A 1-1 draw at home against TFC. Then they went to Charlotte, and unlike the Red Bulls, they crushed CLT 3-0 on goals by Wiley Araujo. Oh, Wiley had a brace in that game. Then they had Portland at home and beat them 5-1 with an Almada brace. And then last week, Brooks Lennon got the lone Atlanta goal after Columbus was up 5-0. You may be aware that there's some history between these two teams since 2017 when Atlanta entered the league. The teams have played 14 times, and the Red Bulls lead the all-time contest 9 wins, 1 loss, and 4 draws. They've never lost a regular season game to Atlanta. Of course, as we all know, Atlanta's lone win in the series came in the 2018 Eastern Conference playoffs, where a rotated left-back situation with Kamar Lawrence being out and Connor Lade put in and some very questionable tactics by Chris Armas led to the best team in MLS regular season history up until that point being ousted in a 2-game aggregate loss. The last time these two teams met, it was August 17th. The Red Bulls got goals from Lewis Morgan and John Tolkien before Josef Martinez scored the only Atlanta goal ever at Red Bull Arena in the 95th minute, made things kind of a little squeaky bum, but New York got through it 2-1. Danny Royer is the all-time leading scorer with 4 goals, and Lewis Morgan is 2 on the active roster. Here is Gonzalo Pineda's most likely 4-2-3-1. Brad Guzan, known quantity, falls down comically when he gives up a goal. It's been known to happen. He's given up a lot of goals to the Red Bulls at Mercedes-Benz over the years. Brooks Lennon, the right back, has a goal and an assist in 5 games. Miles Robinson, who played very, very well on his return from injury, missed the World Cup, obviously, had 1 assist in 10 games last year before he was hurt, but he's a pretty important player. Juan Jose Pirata from Mexico came in from Tigres. He is the center back. And then our old friend, Andrew Gutman, who played so well for New York in 2021 with 4 goals and 3 assists last year for Atlanta. CDM's Amar Sejic with 1 assist so far this season, and Franco Ibarra, an Argentine. And then the midfield line, Luis Araujo, the Brazilian, with 2 goals and assists this year. There's Almada, the number 10, 4-4. And Caleb Wiley, the young American, with 3-2, which may be the high watermark for all Americans in MLS through week 5. Although, no, that would be Jordan Morris, who dropped 4 goals last week. pardon me. The striker is Georgios Giakoumakis, as I had mentioned. This current year, 10 goals and assists when you combine his Celtic stats with Atlanta. So Atlanta will be back at full strength. Atlanta only plays the way Atlanta knows how to play, which is a possession-style, quick-moving ball that New York has been able to manage every single time during the MLS regular season. And Joe is already shaking his head.
Yeah, I think that this is going to be a really tough out for the Red Bulls. I think Atlanta's attack is very, very quick. I know that they've been quick in the past, but I think they haven't had a dynamic player like this since Almiron. His ability to hit a free kick from around the box is troubling, especially for the way the Red Bulls have been playing. I think that they are a good team. I don't know if on their best days so far we're really getting a good sense of who they are, because you know the two big wins came against maybe not the best teams. You know, Portland is meh. But that doesn't mean that this is not a dangerous team, and the Red Bulls are really going to have to figure out a lot of things, but figure out a good way to press them without giving up the home run ball, because that's where Atlanta, I think, and especially with guys like Caleb Wiley, have really feasted, is, you know, making teams run back to their own goal and defend and, you know, just kind of crossing them up or you know, finding ways around them. And I know that the Red Bulls have been fairly clean, if we can say that, on the back line. But this is going to probably be their steepest test so far.
And a second straight match on turf.
Yes.
Which is hard to do in this league, right? Because it's really only five or six teams left that still have the turf. And so, you know, what that means for, you know, last week, when speaking about Lewis Morgan, who, by the way, has now missed, you know, two games on the trot, with a hamstring, or is it a quad? Nevertheless, said, I don't know if Charlotte's turf is the kind of turf we want to bring him back on.
Right.
I mean, if New York's having trouble getting forward, this would probably make sense. And then also, of course, the question of just when is Van Zier going to be a starter? I mean, I up one goal, he doesn't come on for me if Harper stays healthy in that match last week.
Yeah.
They just save him and put Barlow on in the 80th minute to stretch the defense, and off you go. It's going to be it's a tough assignment for sure.
I think, you know, hindsight being 2020 and all, rather than trying to, you know, pack the front line to do that in the midfield would have been a better way to go. And there is a possibility that we see, you know, the lone striker set up against Atlanta as a way to kind of counteract what they could do there.
Yeah.
And, you know, Corey Burke coming back probably helps a lot. Caceres being there probably helps a lot. So, you know, as bad as last week was, it's important to remember that there are still some pretty big and significant pieces that weren't on the field for that game.
Struber noted that Caceres's trip as well away from the team last week really hurt them, that a rock fight match is definitely the kind of match that Caceres can excel in, and he was sorely missed. All right, let's go around the East. There is one team in the East without a loss. Do you know who it is?
Off the top of my head, I'm going to say Cincinnati.
It is FC Cincinnati with three wins and two draws. And they host a Miami team that I think has lost three straight now.
Yeah, I have four straight, I believe, after this weekend.
Okay. the Crew riding high over their win over a very light Atlanta team takes on RSL that is 1-3. Woof.
Oh, they looked real bad against St. Louis. I'll pick Columbus.
The Revs, who are on top of the East with four wins and a loss, welcome New York City FC to Foxborough.
I'm going to call it a draw. I think that City can escape there with a point.
All right. Orlando and Nashville tangle in Central Florida. These teams are 4-6 on the Eastern table. That's a good game.
That is a very good game. I'm going to say I'll call this one a draw as well.
Philadelphia slumming it in eighth place visits Sporting Kansas City. Oh, sorry, excuse me, hosts Sporting Kansas City, who are one of four teams in the league that are winless. In fact, all four winless teams are in the West, which is interesting.
I'm going to call this one for Philly.
Toronto, who has the same record as the Red Bulls, bring Charlotte to BMO.
Charlotte on the road, can't pick them, so at Toronto.
The Chicago Fire have only lost once in four matches. They have scored 7 and allowed 7, and DC United is coming to town, one of three teams below the Fire in the standings.
I think this is going to be a fun match to watch. I think it's going to be a little bit of a shootout, but I'm going to pick Chicago.
Vancouver is another one of those winless sides with 2 losses and 3 draws. That's good enough if you're in the West for being 1 point below the line. That's not good. Montreal takes the long trip out to British Columbia.
If Brian White is healthy, and I don't know because I haven't watched any Vancouver this year, but if he's healthy, this is going to be a breakout game for him, and he's going to win it for them.
All right. And then lastly, our match, you could make an argument that this is a marquee matchup, although the team, I mean, the Red Bulls aren't the one holding up their end of the bargain here, for sure, as New York is currently in 11th in the East. But, Atlanta and Red Bulls, that should be meaningful.
It should be meaningful. I'm struggling for a way to see them winning this, and I realize that I really led everybody astray by getting away from this 1-1 prediction, but here we go. We're going back to it. So it's a 1-1 draw.
Amada has 4 goals and 4 assists in 4 games. The Red Bulls have, at least from a statistical standpoint, they've allowed the fewest shots on goal in the league, in league history after 5 games. And one of those shots was a penalty kick. New York has owned this rivalry in the regular season. They've never lost in the regular season to Atlanta in Atlanta. I'm going to say Atlanta wins 1-0. When we're back on Seeing Red, we're going to hear from Jason Longshore, longtime radio man for Atlanta United. Keep it here.
You're listening to Seeing Red.
Back on Seeing Red, the New York Soccer Roundup. It's Atlanta week. The Red Bulls have never lost in Atlanta, and have only lost to Atlanta once in that team's history. And when we talk Atlanta, we talk to the color voice of Atlanta United Radio on 92.9 The Game in the great Peach City. That's Jason Longshore back on Seeing Red. Hi, Jason.
Hey, what's going on? Can I correct you for a minute to start?
Yeah.
The Red Bulls have lost to Atlanta in Atlanta, but not in the regular season.
Okay. All right. All right. Yeah, I think Red Bull fans will remember that.
The only one. All right.
All right. That's fine. in general, though, thank you for that. Some of us have completely blocked that match from our memories. That was this. Okay. Let's not revisit. Let's move forward. Why are the Red Bulls Atlanta's bogey team in general, though?
I think it's the style. I mean, you've got two clubs that have very different philosophies on how they see the game. And it goes all the way up to the top. And when the Red Bulls went down the Red Bull style of play, it's the opposite, about as close to a direct opposite as you can get of the way that Atlanta has tried to play from day one, even with different managers, interpreting it differently. And it just goes down to one team bases everything on having the ball and having possession, and the other doesn't. So for Atlanta, that's been a big struggle. And I think at times, maybe it has become a little bit of a philosophical battle. And rather than doing what needs to be done to just get the result in a regular season match, they are trying to do it their way. The one I always think back to in that sense was 2018, the last regular season game on the road at Red Bull Arena, when Atlanta was in great form and they were determined to go in and play and not give up possession and not, you know, try to flip the script at all, and couldn't do it. You know, it's an interesting battle when you get to the philosophies of the clubs. And I think that's what has given Atlanta problems over the years.
Atlanta doesn't seem to have too many problems this season, except when those darn FIFA dates gets in the way. Is Miles Robinson that important to this back line? And I guess I'm answering the question. It must be yes.
Yeah, it's interesting because going into Columbus, I don't think anyone saw the struggles that saw it coming. You know, I think anytime you're missing guys like Miles and Thiago Almada and Yorgos Giakoumakis and starting to build a little bit of chemistry with that group, you worry a bit, but I didn't see that kind of a performance coming at all. I don't know if it's purely Miles. I mean, obviously Miles helps Atlanta play the way they want to play, because you can be even more aggressive in the counter press if you know that Robinson can clean things up on the back end. You know, his range is incredible. And I've never seen someone come back from an injury like he suffered almost a year ago now and look this good this fast. I mean, you wouldn't think, if you just saw him play, that he didn't play for about a year. You just wouldn't think that. But in Columbus, I think, you know, there were a couple things that ended up being big factors in that game. Not just missing Miles, you were also missing Luis Abram, who's away with the Peruvian national team. So you only had two center backs, right? Juanjo Parata and Noah Cobb, 17, starting his first MLS game. And I mean, that's a tough spot. This is a kid who they have a ton of belief in. Carlos Bocanegra said it in the offseason, and I thoroughly agree. He's a future U.S. men's national team center back. He has that kind of ability. He's a Michael Parkhurst kind of center back. Very, very cerebral, very smart player. I thought composure, he was actually fine in Columbus. I don't think it was purely on him. When Columbus started two up top, that put a lot of stress on Atlanta's defensive setup with two center backs. That was a little unexpected. And then Andrew Gutman being injured late in the first half, he was the one who was covering as the pseudo third center back. He gets hurt. You're putting Caleb Wiley in that situation. That's a big ask for a teenager who's been a great attacker, but defensively, that's a very different job, different set of responsibilities. And it just kind of fell apart early in the second half. And that can't happen again, but hopefully with players here and not all the way on international duty, you'll have more options to fix those things.
Do you think the team will quickly put that result behind them? I mean, like you said, it was practically a different, you know, completely different 11.
That's the question I have. And I'm on my way to training now this morning, and we'll see training again for a little while on Thursday. And I've been talking about this for the last day. I don't exactly know how to feel about the Columbus game yet until I see how they start on Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, if they come out and start well, I'm not worried about the Columbus game at all. It's just you wad it up and you throw it in the trash. If you see any residual effects, if there is any hesitancy, if there is any, and you can't have that against the Red Bulls, not the way that they play. If you don't have that bravery on the ball, then I'm going to be a little more worried. But we'll see how they look in training, and we'll see, most importantly, how they look to start on Saturday.
Has the short age of unrest at Atlanta been put in the rearview mirror? Because, I mean, Red Bull fans have watched with unabashed glee as you guys have kind of had your franchise's really first spell of we don't really know what we're doing. We don't have success. We're changing managers like we're, you know, changing dirty socks. And now it seems, at least with the start that you guys had this year, that the ship has been righted. But I want to hear that from you.
Yeah, I like where the club is right now. Garth Lagerwey coming in, I mean, that's instant stability. He's one of the best executives in soccer, and he's in a different role in as a CEO here, and I think that was what attracted him to coming to Atlanta. He wasn't going to have that opportunity in Seattle, and he talked about that as the general manager. He felt like he'd kind of maxed out everything that he could do there after winning CONCACAF Champions League. Comes here and gets to run everything, the business side and the soccer side. And that's really appealing to somebody with the ambition that Garth has. So he comes in with a fresh set of eyes. I think it's revitalized a lot of things. Honestly, in terms of the manager side of things, I think Gonzalo Pineda just getting a healthy group to work with is the most important element. I mean, last year, there were points in the middle of the season where he didn't have any of his starting holding midfielders, goalkeeper, or back line except for one player. It'd be one out of the back seven.
Oh, my goodness.
And, I mean, the game at Red Bull Arena is, I think, the prime example. We're having this conversation before training last week. Sam Jones wrote a great piece about something that Lagerwey had said about the idea that in MLS, obviously you start your best 11, you should be winning a lot of games. You can start nine out of your – well, depending. Got to remember where Garth's coming from.
Yes.
If you start nine out of your best 11, you shouldn't see a drop-off there.
Right.
Get to eight, more of a drop-off. Seven, obviously more of a drop-off, and it keeps going down. The Red Bulls game at Red Bull Arena last year for Atlanta United, Gonzalo felt like he had four or five of best 11 players available for that game. And that went down to the wire. That was actually a really good performance from a very young group.
It was an exciting game for sure. And
Martinez
scored.
It's healthy. Yeah.
The first goal ever at Red Bull Arena for you guys. So that's exciting.
That was a crazy night for us too, because Mike Conti and I on radio, we both got COVID in Toronto a few days before that. So we couldn't travel. We had to call it from home. And then Mike lost his voice in the 75th minute. So I had to take over and play by play. And that's when we scored, and then you guys scored too, and it was a mess.
Almada has had a start like no one else in the league, right? Four goals and four assists in four games, for Almada. And I don't know if infinity is the amount of money that he'll be sold for this summer, most likely, but I guess the question is, who's next? It's almost a foregone conclusion that this kid, World Cup champion, is, you know, the next big sale. And so I don't want to ask about him because he's certainly a known quantity. I want to ask about who's behind him.
That's a good question. When you have that kind of resource coming into the club with what that transfer fee will be, it opens up a lot of doors. And I'm really fascinated to see which set of doors get opened. Is that money just like straight up reinvested in one player and you just go big? It's possible. You could. And Atlanta's never really been the club to go after the 30-year-old who could come in and win now. And maybe with this team, depending on where you are in the summer, that might be a little more appealing at that time to go ahead and just get somebody who can walk in the door and not need to adjust. Thiago needed about 6 months last year to adjust. Second half of the season, he was great. First half, it took him a minute. We've seen that with young guys coming into this league. Or do you do what Atlanta's done typically, which is spend on a guy who you expect to grow into an even better product on the other side, and then be sold for a large profit? I don't know. I honestly don't know, because this will be the first time that it's come up with Garth Lagerwey as the president, you know, and he's not making that final call. Again, he's, you know, CEO, not general manager, but of course his voice is going to be big in the room in terms of the strategy. So how that goes down will be fascinating. And I really wish I had an idea of what to tell you. There are players out of South America that would fit the profile of what Atlanta's done in the past. There are those guys on the way. I don't know if there is a Almada on the way, because he honestly might be the best player to come through MLS at that age ever. He honestly might be that guy. And I just don't, I don't think you can replace him like for like, but can you get something that fits the Atlanta mold from the past? Yes. You could also get somebody, and this summer could be a really wild one in the overall landscape. When you look at some of the big clubs that you would expect could be after an Almada, there's going to be a lot of managerial changes. There already have been some in Europe. You're going to have some veteran players who are kind of pushed out the door a little bit because a manager might walk in the door, say, you're not my guy. I want to bring this guy in. And there could be some interesting names available. So it's kind of a wait and see. And I just keep telling Atlanta United fans, and I'd say the same to anybody in the league, just enjoy this guy while he's here.
Yeah.
Because I've never had the opportunity to watch a player up close who can do the things that Thiago Almada does. It's just mind-blowing on a game-by-game basis.
That free kick was outrageous. I want to get your take on the report earlier this week that MLS team owners are considering pooling their money to bring Leo Messi to Miami, which, when you consider how much money David Beckham has, I found a little head-scratching. While I understand that everyone will benefit from having Messi in the league, I'm just kind of curious what the long shore take is on, first, Messi in the league, and secondly, the idea that every owner is going to be asked, in theory, story, rumor, to chip in to bring him here.
I take almost every report when it comes to Leo with a grain of salt, because he keeps everything so close to the vest. You know, it's a family business with Team Messi, and I don't think things generally get out very easily. So I saw the report, and the idea of the mechanism to get him here doesn't make a lot of sense, because you're right. I mean, Miami could handle it if they want to pay for it. Now, you know, would the league, and this has come up in other reports, you know, would the league find ways to bend rules or allow a contract like they did with Beckham back in the day to allow an ownership share or whatever like that, that I don't think they have available now, but would they do that for Messi? Yeah, and they should. And that's all fine. I have no problem with that. I mean, Messi would be, it's not transformational. It's not the right word. It would be huge for the league because of just having someone who is still playing at an insanely high level come into the league with his level of notoriety as perhaps the greatest to ever do it.
And one of the most famous people on the planet.
Yeah, flat out. I mean, if you haven't seen the videos down in Argentina this past week of just the nonstop celebrations of this team winning and Messi as almost a deity at times, it feels like. Yeah, you want that guy in your league, and you will stretch things to get it done. I don't buy the idea that you would have to pull money to get it done. I don't. I think if it happens, that's not the way it happens. That feels like a silly report. But would the league bend rules, make new rules, create new mechanisms? Yeah, and they should.
We do remember the Beckham rule. I would think that Tim Cook himself could probably spare a few nickels, since he will be benefiting directly.
That's the more likely one to me. Honestly, like you nailed it. That if there's any pooling of anything,
it's Apple's
that
money.
Would actually make a lot of sense.
Yep. You have a prediction for Saturday night, Red Bulls at Atlanta?
I
know
not
it's early
even
in the week.
Thought about it yet. It's so early. And one, I mean, I guess the biggest unknown for Atlanta beyond the reaction to the Columbus game is getting guys back and how they get back and when they get back and how many minutes they play in this last game. Miles Robinson played 90 last night.
Right.
That's Monday. He's in Orlando. He might be here at the facility this morning. That's a short hop. He's not going to train, but he might be here, region, be able to train the rest of the week and be just fine. Thiago is in Argentina. They play tonight. not exactly an easy trip from Buenos Aires to Atlanta. So when he gets in, is he going to be 90 minutes ready on Saturdays, or going to be more like 60? We just don't know yet. So I would like to hold a prediction for now, if that's okay, just because I have no idea what this lineup's going to look like yet.
Yeah, that's fair. Jason Longshore has been covering Atlanta United Soccer since there was Atlanta United Soccer, and before that, a major voice in the Atlanta soccer scene for decades, I think that's fair to say, and proud to have known him for a very long time. Jason, thank you so much for coming on, and enjoy the match on Saturday.
Thanks for having me on. It's going to be a fun one. Red Bulls Week always is.
There you go. We've got more Seeing Red coming up after this short break.
You're listening to Seeing Red.
Hey, we're back on Seeing Red, the New York Soccer Roundup, with a scratchy voice. Sorry, folks. Next week we'll feel better. Our one email is from Ed DeRota this week. This may be Ed's first time writing. I'm not sure. He says, "Hi, guys." Hi, Ed. "We're now over a month into the season. I've been trying to figure out why Van Zier has yet to start a single match. With Van Zier coming off a Team of the Week performance and New York missing the offensive firepower of Morgan due to injury and Burke and Casares international duty, I can't imagine why Struber would not want him on the field. The excuse given this week was that he was ill during training. Illness may account for him not being 90-minute fit, but it doesn't mean he wouldn't be able to start. It seems like there were questions about his fitness. The logical thing to do would be to start him, try and capture the early lead, and then bring him out of the match when he ran out of gas. And if necessary, they could bench him next week against Atlanta, when the team has Casares, Burke, and Morgan back. Now, there's been a lot of discussion about how Van Zier could become the most expensive signing in Red Bull New York history should he collect on his signing bonuses. Is it possible that Struber has been told to limit the number of minutes and starts Van Zier has in order to avoid paying those bonuses? And doesn't it make sense that if Struber were limited to how much he can pay him, that Struber would save those minutes until the end of the season when New York would be attempting a playoff position momentum push? Struber seems to be using Van Zier exactly as if he were told to limit his minutes to average about 20 minutes per game for the first run of the season. This is the best I have for explaining Van Zier's time, playing time up to this point, and there have been these kinds of shenanigans in the past. Is it something that you guys think is possible? Thanks for putting on the best soccer podcast in the New York metro area. Ed, first of all, thank you for the kind words. We usually prefer those words at the start of the email because the buttering up helps you get read. As it is, you are the lone email of the week. Thank you for listening. And so, Joe, I'm not going to add any editorializing. What do you think of Struber's playing Van Zier to this point, sir?
Ed, I am a huge fan of tinfoil hat theories. I'm going to throw this one in there in terms of paying out a bonus. New York and Red Bulls in general are very much about ROI. So when you spend money on a player, they expect that they're going to be able to get that money back, Kaku aside. But yeah, I don't think that there's a mandate to keep him off the field in order to not pay out the bonuses. That doesn't make sense to me. We know that this is a difficult system for strikers to slot into. Van Zier is kind of working his way into that. Maybe being ill at the wrong time has created this storyline for you, but I think it's just a matter. I mean, you've seen him on the field. You see when he can be successful and connect, and you see where he's kind of still struggling to figure out where he fits. I mean, I talked about that in the first segment, that when he's out there, is he going to be the guy that is leading the line and playing that sort of target role, or is he going to be somebody who's more of a forward who can drop back and help link up the midfield and the front line with the second partner? I think that until he is more comfortable in the system, Struber's just not going to play him that much. We've seen him do as much with many players throughout his tenure here. You know, guys who ended up becoming stalwarts for a while. I mean, Frankie Amaya could not sniff the field in his first season. After he went to the bench, he was gone for a while. So Struber has, I would say, maybe uncharacteristically for this league, very high standards before he's willing to, you know, put somebody in the starting lineup consistently. And he sticks to his guns on that, I think, for the most part. And I think it's just, I think it, that's all that there really is to it. We're five matches in. We're a little bit frustrated because we've got one win. We're struggling to put anything on target. This guy, Dante, is supposed to come in and, you know, be gangbusters. And I think we see flashes of it, but it's just not there yet. And maybe just a little bit of patience and things will work themselves out. What do you think, Mark?
So, you know, what we hear from Struber on a regular basis when we get a chance to speak to him is that, you know, he was away from the game for 6 weeks, and that changes your match readiness.
Yep.
And that, you know, it was a great storyline at Red Bull Arena last time out when he came in off the bench and, you know, was able to very skillfully win the game off an amazing cross from John Tolkien. That was terrific. But as Struber is fond of saying, he's not here for 6 weeks. He could be here for 6 years, although I don't believe he'll be here for 6 years. But basically, he's a long-term signing. He'll be here for at least 3 years. Yeah. He's under contract for 3 years. And so while it may seem, excuse me, that the team desperately needs goals and here's a guy that can do that and I don't care if you're match fit or not, for 90, just throw him on. I think I appreciate Ed's note about why don't you just start him, and then when he runs out of gas, you know, you take him off. Well, the challenge with that is you only get three windows to sub players, and you can only sub five players. And would it not be better, because all of the Red Bulls games are tight, right? All of them have been low scoring, right? They've only given up zero or one goals per match, right? And so would you rather have a guy who is more skilled than perhaps others on the team from an attacking standpoint taking on a tired defensive line from the 70th minute on or the 60th minute on? I mean, I was surprised. You know, frankly, I've been surprised that we haven't seen him at the very least at halftime.
Yeah.
Because from a fitness standpoint, he should absolutely be able to play 45. But again, I'm dealing with some yucky winter spring cold. If Van Zier has the same, you know, I don't really feel like running around either right now, but he probably went out there and did his thing. And I know I am not getting paid to do that, getting paid very well. But, you know, if you're not feeling well, and you're not training well because you're sick, like that these are human beings. So I appreciate the notion, but we really kind of have to take what Struber says at face value, because he is not, trust me, after 3+ years of covering him, he's not the guy that's going to straight up tell you a falsehood if you ask him a question. He's going to tell you what he really thinks. It's that Austrian brutal honesty, which, you know, sometimes comes out when he's talking about his players. So, I do appreciate, not to take anything away from your email, which is very good. You misspelled Struber's name in a lot of different creative ways. I don't know if that was, there was a Struber, there was a Struber. It was good stuff.
I'll stick up for Ed because I'm constantly misspelling stuff because of autocorrect. So I'll just blame autocorrect for you, Ed.
All right. It's all good. Ed, nonetheless, really, thank you for the email. Very much appreciated. We've come to the end of episode 525, 5 1/4, which deserves, I guess, some sort of numerical nod. Anything else in the soccer world you want to bring up before we go?
No, not at the time. I actually, you know, we didn't really talk about the U.S. too much, but despite only just kind of getting over the hump in the El Salvador game, I think you're starting to see that midfield is looking pretty good. McKenney and Reyna looked, I thought, better than he has for quite a while for the U.S. And yeah, that team is, I think, shaping up pretty nicely. It'll be interesting to see how they do against Mexico.
They really miss Tyler, though.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And Tyler just had surgery, and he's going to be out a while.
He's starting to get a reputation, that Tyler Adams.
What, of getting injured often?
Yeah, he's missed a good chunk of time over the last couple of years.
Him and Pulisic and McKenney.
Yep.
And these are still young players. It was nice to see Pepe score. If he can get...
Yeah, definitely. You know,
Jimmy Conrad made some big tweet that got amplified, which was basically, I can't believe we didn't take this guy to Qatar because... you know, him or Jesus Ferreira, like, come on. So, but, you know, players fall in and out of form all the time. And the fact that Pepe's playing in the Dutch league where Michael Bradley once finished the season as the leading scorer in the league, right? It's not a league for defense. Not a league for defense. So, did we talk about Arsenal coming for the All-Star game? They're going to be playing at DC United?
I don't know if we did, but that's fun. Arsenal's a good team. I don't know if you've seen, but they're
A good team. They certainly are. Did we spend some time talking about MLS playing through the FIFA window this time?
That we did talk about. And obviously, look, I mean, it affected teams pretty heavily. Atlanta was demolished because they were missing two of their best players and then also heavily rotated.
There was a very pointed editorial by Stephen Goff in the Washington Post who talked about basically by playing on international match days like this while holding the League's Cup without any sort of interruption, what you're basically telling fans is that the regular season just doesn't matter that much.
Yep.
I mean, also you can make the argument that letting nine teams in the playoffs in each side, each conference, also says that the regular season doesn't matter that much. But, you know, when you're forcing teams like Atlanta, like everybody, like the Red Bulls, you totally could have used Burke and Caceres last week. It would have been amazing. It would have certainly been different. Then you throw in a ref that actually knows what the hell he's doing, and it would have been very, very different. But the point is, you know, they're going to play through FIFA windows a couple of times this year, and they've got you've got the Open Cup, and you've got the League's Cup, you've got the Campione's Cup, and you've got the playoffs, and 34 regular season games. Like, maybe you could just figure out a way to move these games play on a Tuesday night one year, one week. I don't know. Play on a Wednesday. Shift your weekend so it's a crazy indoor soccer Friday, Sunday sort of thing. I don't know. But it very much cheapens the regular competition, which is what we're talking about. The two team played this weekend for the first time.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up too. Wiki had a great goal in the seventh minute of that game where I don't even think the keeper moved. There was never a chance that he expected him to shoot. When he did, won the ball at the top of the box and just fired home a great shot, and they looked pretty good overall, and then gave up a 95th minute goal on a corner kick.
So
Red Bull too from the last couple of years.
And then because there are no ties in this league, when you're after 90 minutes, you go straight to a penalty shootout, and then the winning team gets another point, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Red Bulls did not do terribly well with their penalty kicks. Peter Stroud played in this game.
And looked good. Wiki looked good overall, even, beside the goal. They really squandered an opportunity on a two-on-none break late in the second half that probably ices the game if they put it away. And just took too long to make a decision. Defense caught up and
Drew Yearwood played in this game.
He did. He had an opportunity at one point too. He just missed the ball.
All right. And Big Haas played in this game.
Mm-hmm.
So good stuff. Good stuff.
Haas and Noseda, and they both looked good.
Excellent. And who did they play next? Did they play this weekend?
Oh, good question.
Let's see. We'll check it out. We're doing it live. They're at Atlanta United on Sunday. So I think we're going to see a lot of this where the two team plays the day after the primary teams play.
It really is the old reserve league.
If there were any doubts.
Yeah.
All right, let's wind it up. Thank you so much to Jason Longshore for stopping by and Zach Feldman for your stats. And to you, Joe, and everyone that listened. Joe calls Saturday night at 7:30's game a...
I'm going classic, 1-1.
1-1. That would continue the streak against Atlanta. Yeah. I am going to call it... who's calling this game? Keith Costigan and Maurice Adu calling this game. Okay. I'm going to call it a 1-0 Atlanta win. And then New York comes home. When we're back, we'll be back next week to Seeing Red. At Seeing Red to talk all about it, you know. Have a wonderful night. Let's go, Red Bulls. Good night.
Thanks for listening to Seeing Red. Get us anywhere you get your podcasts and always at seeingrednY.com.